Now, a public health order that the Trump administration put in place, known as Title 42, was intended to limit illegal crossings at the U.S. border with Mexico during the pandemic. It was supposed to expire tomorrow after a court ruling. But after 19 Republican state attorneys general requested the U.S. Supreme Court step in, Chief Justice John Roberts announced yesterday that it would remain in place, at least temporarily. In anticipation of Title 42 going away, there have been reports of increases in asylum seekers traveling to the southern border. What happens now that the order is staying in effect is up in the air. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the status of America's immigration policy, especially when it comes to the southern border? Do you think Title 42 should remain in place? What would you like to see come out of all of this? Would you like to see Congress do something? If so, what? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Rick Sue is a professor of law at the University of North Carolina School of Law, where he teaches and writes in the areas of local government law, immigration, and federalism. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
It's a pleasure to be back.
Let's start with Title 42. What did it actually do? What is it actually doing right now?
Yeah, so it's an immigration law that is essentially dressed up as a public health measure. Mm-hmm. So the reason why it's useful as an immigration measure is because it essentially, or at least administrations have been using it to prevent people from applying for asylum. They should legally have a right to apply for asylum, but essentially through Title 42, they're excluding them without giving that opportunity. It's a public health measure, however, because it's not an immigration law. It's actually a law that is implemented to help prevent the introduction of a communicable disease, which is COVID. But that's the problem, because essentially the policy is based on not introducing COVID to the United States. But of course, that raises legal issues because it's not clear that it serves that purpose right now, given that COVID's already here and that the way we're implementing it doesn't really seem to be about COVID.
Let's talk about how applying for asylum works pre-Title 42 and under Title 42. If I'm coming up from, say, El Salvador, I want to cross the border. I could go to a legal point of entry or attempt to cross somewhere else. Either way, if and when I come into contact with authorities, I could then make an asylum request. What happens then under normal non-Title 42 policy?
Yeah, so under normal policy, they would first do a screening to determine whether or not you may have a legitimate claim. But if they do determine that you may have a legitimate claim, you're scheduled for a hearing. And here's where some of the problems is arising, is that on the one hand, we can keep these people in detention, but we don't have a lot of detention capacity, especially when they're families with children. As a result, what's been going on is that we release some of them into the country to await essentially the court date, especially ones that we think will show up for the court date and will not pose a danger to the community. So as a result, people applying for asylum means that there's going to be more people awaiting their asylum adjudication and being released into the country.
Now, under Title 42, that same asylum seeker, if that's me, I show up at the border either place. What's happening under Title 42? I don't even get to make that request, right?
Yeah, so that's the way it's being used right now. And this is acknowledged that there are some legal questions about whether or not that's legitimate. Again, Title 42 is not an immigration measure. Under immigration law, you have a right to claim asylum. We may even have an international obligation to allow you to claim for asylum. But when it was implemented by the Trump administration and continued with the Biden administration, they've essentially interpreted this emergency health measure as essentially circumventing the ability to apply for asylum. So as a result, these individuals that are usually sent back to Mexico, though they're not willing to accept everyone that we send back, especially if they're not Mexican nationals. But essentially, that's why it's become useful, is to essentially not allow them to apply for asylum to begin with.
Now, we keep seeing reports of large numbers of people today waiting across the border, hoping this Title 42 policy changes. It was scheduled to end on tomorrow. What's accounting for this large number? Is this pent-up demand, people who have been coming and being rejected, people who are waiting, pending the policy? What's going on?
Yeah, so one of it is pent-up demand, right? Because of Title 42, a lot of people have been sent back, but then they try to cross over and over and over again, right? Because the longer, especially if you can try to sneak in and stay, then hopefully they won't be able to exclude you with Title 42 and you can apply for asylum. So some of that is just people that have been there, right, looking to come in all sorts of different circumstances. But there's also another sort of interesting thing going on, which is we tend to forget that these people applying for asylum, the countries are changing, right? So now it's mostly Haiti, it's Venezuela, even the countries that we talked about before are different. So it seems like there's just a lot of instability in the countries in the Southern Hemisphere. And that's also causing, I think, a lot of people to seek admission into the country, partly because they're being pushed out by different forces in their home country.
Talking to Rick Sue, immigration expert at the University of North Carolina School of Law, looking at this federal policy, again, a health policy that's been used as an immigration policy at the U.S.-Mexico border. Supposed to end tomorrow. Now that's bumped back. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, what you think of this policy, whether you want to see it end, if there's a better way you think to handle how we handle immigration at the southern border. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. All right, Rick, when we called you originally, we're going to talk about this policy that's about to expire. Since we called you, Supreme Court says, hang on, we're putting this on hold. Biden administration report in by Tuesday, today afternoon. Where are we right now?
Yeah, right now we're up to the Supreme Court. And this is acknowledged that getting up to this point, it's been a roller coaster, right? We had a court in Louisiana that essentially said that the Biden administration cannot get rid of Title 42. Then we had a court in District of Columbia, D.C. Circuit, that essentially said you had to get rid of Title 42. And of course, that was coming up with the 21st as the date that it had to be eliminated because the court ruled that it was outside their power. This is not really about public health. And then the Supreme Court stepped in. Now, the Supreme Court has put a stay, and they've said that they wanted to essentially consider the arguments that are being made. Though it's not entirely clear exactly what argument that they're looking at, whether it's exactly the substance of Title 42, the more technical question, which is whether or not these Republican states can actually intervene in this litigation. They weren't part of the original litigation. The litigation was essentially individuals suing the federal government. So they want to come in and essentially defend Title 42, even though they're not the federal government. So that was actually rejected by the court. So it could be that the court's focusing on that technical question, whether they can even enter into the lawsuit. Or maybe they'll go all the way and decide that they're actually going to decide the substantive issue, which is whether or not this is going beyond the federal government, or more specifically, the CDC's authority to use this as an immigration measure.
And the court has been hostile in some past cases to CDC, to the federal government's claims to have public safety emergency powers when it comes to COVID. So if they look at this as a health rule, that might lead them one way. If they look at this as an immigration rule in practice, could that lead them in a different direction?
Oh, definitely. And I think this is precisely, I think, what a lot of people are looking to the court right now, which is, are they going to stick with precedent and principles, or is politics going to intrude? Certainly, this court has not been very generous with regard to CDC measures specifically. They have not been generous with regard to agency power. They recently actually read the statute to limit the EPA's powers. Following that, it would seem they would be quite cautious of, again, the CDC overstepping its bounds in this particular case. But then again, there's a lot of political forces here that is pushing for Title 42. It's become so useful and is a way of sort of skirting the need for sort of congressional action on this, that pressure might be enough for them to come up with some sort of precedent saying that this is really still all about COVID.
On a practical level, if Title 42 ended, if not tomorrow, then soon, there's a lot of people waiting to come and make asylum claims. And maybe not enough staff to deal with those claims and judges to deal with those claims and enforcement to look at the places where people aren't supposed to be crossing. Is there a serious logistical concern that the system can't handle the number of people who would be seeking asylum?
Yeah, there's definitely a logistical concern. But this is acknowledged that this is not new. In some ways, we've been unable to accommodate the number of people seeking asylum for almost a decade at this point. So these are not new problems. The fact that we don't have enough capacity, the fact that we don't go through these claims fast enough, the fact that we don't have enough resources, right? And of course, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, is asking for more resources with regard to this. And it could be that we need legal change, right, with regard to how we do asylum claims. years. But this is not new, but it will certainly continue and be a problem. Title 42 is a Band-Aid, but maybe it's time to actually look at the actual problem underlying it.
Talking to Rick Hsu, professor of law at the University of North Carolina School of Law, and we're talking about the, at least for now, temporary extension of Title 42, a health policy with big immigration implications, what it means for asylum seekers coming to the U.S. border with Mexico. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're confused by all of this, I promise you are not alone. Do you have a question for a guest about how this works, what it all means? What concerns do you have about what's going on at the U.S. border with Mexico? What do you want to see from the president, the courts, and hey, how about Congress? We'll talk about them in just a bit. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with immigration law expert Rick Hsu from the University of North Carolina School of Law, talking about a public health measure, Title 42, from the Trump administration that was used to turn away asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border without a hearing. It was set to expire tomorrow under a previous court ruling before the U.S. Supreme Court announced a temporary extension yesterday. You can join in with your questions, your reactions, your hopes. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller. Anita is with us in Lindenhurst, Illinois. Anita, hi.
Hi. This is great because it has been a bit of a conundrum. And, you know, it seems to me that the health aspect needs to be taken aside and apart from the immigration section, because what it's doing, it's just something that's thrown in there to legitimize just keeping as many people out as we can. And it seems that the very first thing that should be done to anyone coming into the country that's going to live here is they need to pass a medical. I mean, to me, that's very, very legitimate and very practical. Yeah, it has to be paid for, but we're paying a lot into the immigration problem now anyway. Let's put it towards something positive. If they don't pass the medical, then they have a legitimate reason for sending the people back. But if they pass the medical, it seems to me that even an interview.
We lost you there, Anita, but I think we catch your point. Anita saying, hey, if this is a health measure, let's start with health checks instead of this blanket block.
Yeah, so that's actually a really good point, because that's precisely actually what the court had held in the D.C. Circuit when they approached this as a health measure, right? Because no one's talking about this as a health measure except in court. And the court said, if it's really about a health measure, then shouldn't there be other ways of dealing with it? If we're worried about people coming in with COVID, then we can do a COVID rapid test. We can give them vaccinations. We can even quarantine them, right, if that's what we're really concerned about. So in some ways, the court was saying that partly to suggest that maybe the government is saying it's a public health measure, but it's not. But certainly that would be a possibility. If we really are concerned about COVID and these people having COVID, then that should be part of the processing itself. Now, of course, there are still more logistical problems, but I think at least the health side is the least of the logistical problems here. But that's absolutely correct. That was what the court had noted, if the government was really interested in this as a health measure.
Anita, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Rick, we're talking about the White House doing these things. Title 42 came from the CDC and effectively an executive branch decision here. We're talking about the courts. I remember civics class. There's another part of government called Congress. What are they doing and I guess not doing that's part of this problem?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Before, we always had some sort of, there was a pattern we had, an immigration compromise of some sort every 10 years. And of course, that entirely broke down. And it's been decades since we've had any massive sort of immigration law addressing it. I think the problem here is it's politics. It's not clear at the end of the day, as much as there is a problem, and the problem keeps growing, that there's a lot of political will to actually solve the problem. And not because there's not enough political support to do so. I think there's a lot of political support for various positions. I think there's now a lot of political gain to create or maintain the problem. So I feel like that's kind of the complication going into this. I think there are things that Congress can do and that Congress may want to do. But a lot of people feel there's a lot of political points, and I say on both sides, to sort of keep the immigration issue live and live in a particular way. There's too many live wires here, I think people are afraid to touch.
There was talk of a bipartisan compromise maybe in the works in this current lame duck session. DACA recognition, the deferred A for childhood arrivals. I can't remember all the letters of that.
Yeah.
Remain in Mexico policy, border security funding, things like that. And that seems to have dissolved.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. So the one thing that's really interesting that DACA, right, deferred action for actually. Childhood arrival, actually, right, Dreamers, right, in this particular regard, is in the mix is because that is one area where, at least in terms of polling, it's very popular, right? A lot of people support Dreamers, don't want to see them deported. But I think the issue here is the issue with DACA and the Dreamers is what are we going to trade that for? And I think in some ways, the Republicans are willing to, I think, grant something to Dreamers at some point, but they want to trade something big for it. So it's not clear that this is what it is. Not to mention, the original deal was about extending Title 42, but that has to deal with the fact that Title 42 is a health measure. If they were really going in to sort of change immigration law, that would be a different compromise. But then you got to deal with asylum. And asylum, of course, is connected to international obligations. So essentially, I think what may be on the table is a lot more complicated than just the politics itself as well, because it involves all sorts of different moving parts. This is not something that could be thrown together last minute, unfortunately.
Talking to Rick Hsu with University of North Carolina School of Law, immigration law expert there, looking at this Title 42 on hold right now, still in existence, a health law, as we heard, used as an immigration enforcement measure. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Rick, earlier you mentioned countries of origin for people showing up at the border, changing Venezuela, Haiti, among the countries. Talk that the Biden administration now may try to figure out a way to say, hey, you can apply for asylum without showing up at the border. Do it from your home country. Don't undertake this dangerous journey. What is potentially in the works there?
Yeah, so that has actually been talked about for a while. And this idea is that we would essentially have them be able to apply for asylum in their country of origin. And we can make a decision without them having to either wait at the border or wait in detention in the United States or be released into the country. This is, however, quite difficult, right? I mean, there's a lot of challenges because you have to negotiate with those countries to allow allow us to do that kind of processing, which also means that in some ways, these are individuals that have some sort of grievance against the very country that we're asking for permission to address these grievances. Not to mention, I think one thing that was interesting, when it was originally proposed, we thought that this issue was isolated to essentially the three countries in Central America. Mm-hmm. But now it's spreading. So even if we adopt something like this, it feels like the country of origin just keeps changing, partly because there's just so much instability in the world. So even if we set it up, it may be that by the time we set it up, there's going to be another country, another area, another region that is now going to be the cause for asylum applications. So it may be that alongside that, we may just have to deal with the fact that, deal with the instability in our region, that we should be more cognizant and trying to stabilize the region as well, as much as we focus on different parts of the country, the world.
So the current reality is people are showing up at the border. They're not allowed to apply for asylum. What's the reality now for people in that position?
Yeah, so a lot of them are sent back to Mexico, and this goes along with the Remain in Mexico program, which also does the same. Mexico is not very happy with this, and there are many foreign nationals that they're not willing to take back. So Title 42, Remain Mexico, essentially depends on the cooperation of Mexico. Most of these cases, we're not talking about Mexican nationals anymore. And Mexico, I think, is frustrated at this. So there's foreign affairs concerns implicated in all of this. Not to mention, when they're in Mexico, it's essentially a refugee situation. It's almost like refugee camps there. And those are not necessarily safe. In fact, they're probably worse than some other refugee situations where the UN is involved in this particular case. So they're not in a good situation either with regard to that. So in some ways, it's not good for the countries that are like Mexico, and it's not good for the immigrants who are seeking asylum.
Time for one more caller. John is with us in St. Croix County. John, hi.
Hey, I guess my question is, with this whole immigration thing going and the borders being so porous, these people are coming across, and who's paying to feed them? Who's putting them up? And there's so many people. I'm curious how much of this tax, you know, we're paying all these taxes all the time, property tax.
John, just a minute or so left. But Rick, I mean, if somebody's being detained, then I think the U.S. government's picking up the dime. If they're finding employment illegally, then they're paying into the system in some ways.
That's right. So essentially, what's going on in this situation and why you're hearing a lot of the concerns is not just coming from the federal government, but coming from local government and aid agencies. Is once they get applied for asylum and they're released into the country, the federal government's not responsible for any of them at all. If they have family members, that's great. But a lot of that falls on actually local governments and falls on the sort of hands of local aid agencies. So there could be some complaints that the federal government's actually not doing enough. Though, of course, that is also politically fraught in this particular situation, as you know, with taxes. One thing to note is that all the focus right now is on border enforcement, but these are not people sneaking across the border. These are people presenting themselves to U.S. border agents. So in some ways, we need resources, but it's not necessarily in enforcement. We actually have pretty robust borders right now with regard to detection, and these people are not trying to sneak through. But we may need more resources, or at least coordinate some way of thinking about who's going to actually pay for these individuals when they need assistance. But this is acknowledged that most of them often have family members, or they are able to find employment awaiting their asylum adjudication.
John, thanks for that call. And Rick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Rick Hsu, professor of law at the University of North Carolina School of Law. We talked to him today about the temporary extension of a Trump-era measure that prevented asylum seekers from getting a hearing at the U.S.-Mexico border. It's a COVID-era health policy, but big in the immigration issue.